right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bryce. As always, joined by my good buddy and my notorious compadre, Mr. Brendan Veman. How are you doing, Brendan?
Doing good. Hello, hello, everyone. Yeah, we got another killer pod, Bryce. Excited to be here. And man, what a time for the crypto space. It feels like every time we come back on here, we're like, big things are happening, and we just keep getting bigger and bigger and higher and higher. And man, what a time to be alive.
It truly is. I'm calling in, Brendan, as you know, I'm in my in-law's house for the holiday. And I'm just noticing all this crazy stuff in my background. I'm in the playroom, right, where I got my makeshift office set up. I got a dinosaur in the background. I don't even have my microphone set up.
There's a bird.
Apparently the little nieces and nephews, they really like dinosaurs a lot. So there's all sorts of stuff. But apologies for the messy background if anybody's joining us on YouTube. But this was one that I knew that I could not miss. I was like, I don't care where. I mean, if I need to stop and pull over in the parking lot, I'm going to make sure I don't miss this podcast, because this is a gentleman who is a real builder in the space, somebody who's been around for a long time, and we all have a lot to learn from. Hart Lambert is the CEO of Across. Hart, thank you so much for joining us here at the Crypto 101 Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Like, what a friendly intro. Thank you, guys.
Well, it's dead serious. You know, we're in full disclosure. You know, I have exposure to Across. You know, this is a token that's
Let's go.
Actively traded. Everybody who's listening knows. You know, Tower 18 is the hedge fund that I run, and you know, we're big fans of what you guys have been building, and you know, we've done a lot of research coverage on Across over the years, and so. We're really excited. And UMA, back in the day, the protocol that you started before Across. But we'll get into all that. But we just want to touch base. How are you doing? You're calling in from home. Are you on the road? What's life like for you these days?
I'm pretty nomadic these days, but I am, in home of a sense, in Big Sur, California. So it's, cool. It's pretty nice. Pretty beautiful watching the fog roll in right now. So it's pretty cool.
Nice. I went to school up in Santa Barbara, UC Santa Barbara, and Big Sur was one of the places everybody would go. And it's just, yeah, it's an incredibly scenic town. But yeah, so catch us up. You know, before you even got into crypto, you know, what were you doing? Let's go way back, to what kind of what pulled you into crypto in the first place.
Yeah, man. So I'm a Canadian that studied computer science in the States. And then my honest story here is when I graduated, I wanted to live and work in New York City, where I went to school. Mm. And at that time, because I'm kind of an old man in the crypto space, at that time, there was no tech scene in New York, and I needed to get a job with a company that could get me a visa. And so I got a job in finance. So I was a bond trader. I traded U.S. government bonds and fixed income for 8 years at Goldman Sachs, which is actually very relevant to some of the Across design and how it works. But yeah, I was in TradFi, like the heart of TradFi, for 8 years through the financial crisis before I left to start a fintech business. Fintech business that was in the kind of personal investing space, and I did that for 4 years before it got acquired. And then I've been building in crypto since early 2018, kind of the start of that bear market, building UMA first and then Across, which we can go into.
How was it going from trading bonds to the crypto market? Because typically when people think of bonds, it's a little bit more slower. And then they think of crypto, which is about as volatile as it can get without being levered up.
You know, it's funny because my job in finance was like the 10-year treasury trader, so kind of the benchmark trading point in the yield curve. And you think it's slow, but man, you're dealing with huge sums. And like small moves on big numbers are still big numbers. So, and I was doing this through the financial crisis, through quantitative easing, through all that stuff. And it was... pretty wild time. I learned a lot. It was not what I expected to be doing at all. I always thought I would be a tech guy, but I learned a ton, worked with smart people, really like got a lot of market mechanics under my belt. And that's been, it's been really fun. It was a cool way to start my career.
Well, we've heard a lot of stories of people who have gone through the financial crisis and they were working in TradFi like yourself. And, you know, that was the big reason why Bitcoin was created in the first place. And that's also the same reason that we see a lot of people who were in TradFi then kind of switch to crypto now, is because they got to see the flaws of that system. They got to kind of see the worst of it. And then they got to see the opportunity that Bitcoin and blockchain and crypto had to offer. You know, would you say that that was one of the big kind of turning points for you, is going through that and getting to see the entire TradFi perspective and then maybe kind of view this potential solution?
Yeah, totally. Like, there's a lot of that, Brendan. And more nuanced takes too. So it's not just like TradFi is broken. It's like, how's it broken? Like, okay, financial rails, the way the back end systems, the way settlement works in traditional finance, it's just inefficient. Like, you look at it from a tech perspective and you're like, okay, this doesn't make sense. And, you know, my bear case for crypto, I think your audience will like this. My bear case for crypto is we like reinvent the financial system, because just those rails, that settlement system sucks. Payments, the way you send money, the way you settle bonds, it doesn't make sense in our tech forward world. That's my bear case. The bull case is that the new infrastructure we create allows us to invent a bunch of new things that are not otherwise possible. In the same way that, like, I don't know, the internet let you communicate, but then it let you invent new forms of communication that became really useful and created Instagram and social media and all this other interesting stuff. So, so that's kind of my take there. And then you also saw how financial services, traditionally TradFi, it's very localized. Like, you build a business. If you want to go and build a fintech business, you can't build it globally. You have to build it in like the US or in Germany or in the UK. And it's because like those traditional fintech businesses, they're all localized in the rules and regulations of that jurisdiction. And when you think about that from a internet-centric perspective, it makes no sense. Like, you should be able to build global businesses, and crypto and DeFi will let you do that. And I think that's obviously the future of where this world's going.
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging, so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, it's a great point. And it just has me thinking about just, you know, kind of the word tokenization and, you know, you coming from kind of that TradFi background, you realizing, hey, you know, we could tokenize stocks, we could tokenize bonds and have these trading globally and, you know, shared liquidity pools all around the world and 24/7, 365 and all the cost savings with no intermediaries. And like you start to actually, you know, rack things up. And there's substantial savings to like all this stuff that we're talking about. And I saw a study from Franklin Templeton, which is like, you know, for those who haven't heard of them, they're, you know, $1.5 trillion asset manager. They're like very large institution. And they said that they did some study on sending 50,000 sort of transactions, settling 50,000 transactions, you know, in a traditional way with all the compliance costs and so on. Costs about $50,000 to clear all that, clear and settle that, 50,000 separate transactions. They said they did it with an Ethereum layer two. I don't know if they specified which one, and it cost them $1.52, all that together batched up. And they said that's like a 30,000 times cost savings. And so just imagine scaling that from just a pilot to just one bank to the whole world eventually running on these blockchains. There's going to be a lot of GDP growth that could kind of get unlocked. And I'm really excited. And I kind of wanted to kind of get your perspective because right now I know a lot of the things that Across is working on is really primarily, you know, digitally native assets, whether that's Ethereum or crypto tokens. But before we kind of get into that, I'm curious, just like, do you see that tokenization world, you know, kind of taking off the real world assets? You know, do you think that that's going to be a big value proposition here?
Yeah. I do with asterisks. Like, I think, again, bear case for crypto, we reinvent financial services. But like, what's that mean? Like payments and savings. You know, you go to a lot of the world. I mean, Bryce, to your point, just sending $50 between countries. I mean, it's really expensive to do that in traditional means, like slash almost impossible. Mm-hmm. Even having a stable store of value, like having the U.S. currency or something like it that you can hold as a normal everyday person in many parts of the world is very, very difficult in traditional systems and made a hell of a lot easier with crypto. So like I fully agree. The tokenized real world assets and all that other kind of stuff, that to me is just taking the financial products and services that are available in the developed world, like in the U.S., and making them globally available. Like that seems so obvious and something that there's such obvious demand for in many parts of the world that it's absolutely going to happen. And I think it is going to happen this cycle. So I am excited about that.
I love it. So at what point did you come across Ethereum in particular and think, you know, this is the platform that I wanted to work on and be a part of this community?
Yeah, I did. I was fortunate enough to have like early exposure to crypto, which maybe we can get into later. But sitting around 2018, like early 2018, I wrote a white paper about what it would look like to build derivative transactions, like build financial contracts on a blockchain system. Mm. And at that time, first of all, DeFi didn't exist. It wasn't a term yet. it was kind of like late 2018. There's sort of this discussion about what should we call this thing. But at that time, the smart contract platform that made sense, the only one that really existed was Ethereum. And so that's where I got into it. And I liked its ethos. I liked the way what it stood for. I mean, I think Vitalik, like he literally... In his original white paper, he predicted like 10 use cases and like they're all true now. So I think that made a lot of sense. And again, at that time, this idea of saying, hey, I could write a financial contract that is not enforced by laws and courts and juries, but is rather enforced by economic incentives and computer programs. That was like a wild idea. It's not anymore, which is kind of cool. But that was a wild idea that was like really fun to sink my teeth into back then.
I love it. And at what point were you kind of thinking, all right, so there's this awesome smart contract platform, Ethereum, but now we're working on a cross-chain sort of platform connecting all the different blockchains, you know, the work that you're doing at Across. At what point did you realize it wasn't just going to be Ethereum, but it was going to be this whole world of blockchains that really needed to get connected to one another?
Yeah. Okay. So 2 points on that. So my first project, UMA, we're best known now as being the oracle that resolves Polymarket's prediction markets. So it's an oracle for long tail data. And Across emerged 2.5 years ago as kind of like an internal hackathon on a way to use the UMA oracle, frankly, to send messages between chains. That was the original idea. Hmm. And it evolved a lot since then. But like the real driving force here has been the rollup-centric roadmap that Ethereum has aligned on over the last 4 years or so, which was basically saying, okay, we've got this Ethereum thing. It's pretty cool. It doesn't scale. The way we want to scale it is by adding other blockchains that connect to Ethereum. And I actually think as a scaling technique, it works really well. Like as you guys know, and hopefully most of your audience knows, any individual L2 is now very fast and very cheap. And you can have a lot of them. Like you want more scale, just add another L2 or L3 and you got more scale. But what's the problem? Well, the problem is you now go from having like one chain to having a lot of chains.
Yeah.
And that includes non-EVM or non-Ethereum chains like Solana and Aptos and Sui and, you know, keep going. We have a lot of chains and now it no longer feels like one network anymore, no longer feels like one thing. And we got to fix that. So I look at the Across problem. And again, we should probably talk about what Across is. But Across is it's a bridge between blockchains. I increasingly think the bridge moniker is probably antiquated and not the right one. So it's an interoperability platform that lets you move value between blockchains extremely quickly. We'll talk about how that works, I hope. But it unifies the user experience between all these blockchains by having this ability to move value so quickly between them that it feels like one network again. And I think that's the goal.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to kind of just jump into. And I haven't heard anybody say, you know, the bridge moniker or so on is dead. I've heard that about lots of other things. So you heard it here first, folks. Bridging is a thing of the past. But I like it because it's all about interoperability and not really having to think about moving between one network or another, but just making it a seamless experience. That could have been also a good name, Seamless, instead of Across. But just thought of that. But so tell us, how does Across work? You know, you told us kind of a little bit of the high level, but let's dive into it. How can we have value that's trading or moving between all these different siloed networks? And how is everything reconciled?
Yeah, so without going like too deep on the technical stuff, you guys guide me.
Yeah, because we're also, we and our audience are not programmers mostly, so as if you were speaking to a 101 level audience.
In the name, right?
Yeah.
But no, I'm not going to go technical at all, but it's more like the financial concepts here, right?
Okay.
So the blockchains, most blockchains today have this like this annoying concept of finality, which means you don't actually know what's happened on that blockchain fully, completely, like without it changing for some period of time. And that period of time varies, but like it's just not instant, right? So it takes you a few minutes to longer to know fully and completely that a blockchain has done what it says it's going to do. And so when you're trying to connect them, this becomes a problem, where it's like I have blockchain A and I have blockchain B, and I don't really know for full certainty what's happened on blockchain A for a couple minutes. I know with a really high degree of probability, but I don't know fully and certainly. So when you think of like a traditional bridge, I have to wait for finality on blockchain A, and then I can send a message to blockchain B saying, here's what happened, and then I can like release the funds on blockchain B.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just slow, just takes time. So and that's why people think about bridges, because they're like a bridge. Okay, I got to go like drive to the start of one bridge and then drive across it, and then I'm on the other side. And it just takes a while. We really want to like teleport between these chains. So how can we do that? Well, What we do, and it's very much a financial concept, is on blockchain A, the user deposits funds into an escrow contract. And it says, hey, okay, I have an intent. I want to bridge one ETH to blockchain B. And then I have a bunch of third-party actors. We call them relayers. You can call them solvers. You can call them fillers. You can call them market makers. But these are like semi-professionalized third-party actors that for a fee basically front you money on the destination chain. And they all race to do this. And they can take on finality risk. They can actually fill you before blockchain A is fully finalized. And that's basically what Across does, is we outsource this desire to move funds between chains to this network of third-party actors that race to fill the user with their own funds on the destination chain in exchange for a very small fee. And so doing so, we can have times between these two chains. Like our median fill time right now is 3 seconds between L2s. So you have this like 3 second experience going between these two chains. Feels close to instant. We're going to get faster still, but it feels close to instant because this third party solver network is kind of doing the heavy lifting for you.
Yeah, you know, I think that this whole topic of interoperability is a really good one, because I was just talking to a community member the other day. And they're like, hey, Brendan, I'm so excited, man. I just started this trade and it was a base token. So the base L2, they said, I went through, I opened up my Phantom wallet and I made the swap. And they're like, but I don't know why it didn't appear in my wallet. Like, I went into Phantom Wallet, I bought this token. And for anybody that's listening, Phantom Wallet is a Solana native wallet. Yeah. And they're talking about how they just bought base native tokens. And, you know, I had to kind of walk them through this conversation of, you know, hey, these are two separate ecosystems. These are two separate blockchains. They aren't, natively interoperable, where you can buy one token to another. And they understood the idea afterwards, but it sucks. You know, they spent their money. They kind of wasted it. And that's where this
I think Phantom does now offer a base. You could toggle it on now.
That was the issue, is that they didn't. And it's, you know, unfortunate that they, you know, the swap was done the wrong way. But that's where interoperability comes in. And that's where a lot of this kind of gets offered as a solution, is saying, hey, it doesn't have to be this way. In fact, there's ways to offer some of these solutions. And, you know, people look at a lot of different ways to do this. But would you say that this approach is safer? Because when we look at, you know, kind of traditional bridges in the past, there's some horror stories attached to it. But would you say that this is a little bit like different and probably safer than what we've seen before?
Yes, I would. And it also, there's a lot you can go into around the nuances of the security design here. But like at a really high level, if you get filled in 3 seconds or 2 seconds, it also feels safer. You're like, okay, wait, I just got my thing on the other side. I waited to close my eyes, open them again. It was there, right? That feels way better than waiting 15 or 20 minutes hoping your funds show up, right? That's like, that's not a user experience that scales, that we're going to onboard the next billion users doing that. So yeah, Brendan, I think it is safer because like your funds are at risk. Well, they're not at risk. They're escrowed, and there's not this like honeypot concept. The big bridge hacks come from these crazy honeypots of value that were like locked in one spot that got drained, and that was like awful. Those designs are, I'm really against them, probably out of scope to go into the detail there, but they're really horrific from a user security perspective. Across does not do that. Rather, your origin chain funds are held in escrow and you're filled on the other side in a couple seconds. Mm-hmm. And so it is safer and it feels safer. It feels like a user experience that, you know, a normal person can use.
I think that's also super valuable, because one of the other kind of drawbacks that people have about interoperability and bridging is that they go, it's complicated, I don't understand it. Especially when you look at how it was done a couple of years ago, it wasn't the simplest process. And it was easy for people who just were not crypto natives, you know, people who are used to just doing all their transactions on Coinbase, right? It's easy for them to understand that. Then you tell them to go bridge something through a wallet and it's just a foreign language. And so I think what you're saying there is just making the process a little bit simpler and more user-friendly is also a huge help for adoption as a whole.
Yeah, and I think that, like, to that point, it kind of gets to the heart of the debate, like the monolithic versus modular blockchain approach. It's like people like Solana because they don't have to bridge back and forth between Ethereum or Base and so on. You know, there's different, you know, technical sort of reasons why that might not be the right approach and all that kind of stuff. But from a user standpoint, sometimes it is easier because you don't have to bridge back and forth. But do you ever, you know, do you kind of foresee a world in which all the bridging is obfuscated away, like with Ethereum, so that it feels like even though you're on layer two or layer three, it's just one seamless experience?
Yeah, that's 100% what like has to happen.
It has to happen.
It has to happen.
Yeah.
And it's going to, right?
Yeah.
And so like, and I think today it is right. Like Solana being one chain, if you just live within the Solana ecosystem, it is easier. You go there, you have one chain, do your things, and that's like conceptually simple. Ethereum now with all of its L2s, it's become more complicated. It's got this more scale. It's got more scale. It has great scalability. It has the advantages maybe of like projects and companies can launch their own chain, which many want to and seems kind of like a cool feature. But you now have to like navigate between them with like pretty janky infrastructure, right? And so this is what I think 2025 is going to all be about. It's like on the Ethereum side, it's going to be unifying Ethereum. So it feels like one chain, like Solana, which across is a very important piece to. Like part of it feeling like one chain is it has to be fast, right? And so yeah. That's really what we're focused on. But then a lot of other UX things are also required around like just the way the wallets work and the dApp experience and all that kind of stuff too. And I think that's all going to get solved in this coming year too.
Yeah, you know, one of the other cool things that we've seen here recently is the addition of UniChain, right? This kind of extension of Uniswap. What role do you think that Across could play in this new UniChain that's being proposed?
Yeah, so we work very closely with the Uniswap team. Answer your question. We'll get back into this like standard we've developed with the Uniswap team. But what is the point of UniChain? Well, Uniswap wants to have a cheap place, like cheap low gas fee place for people to do swaps and for people to like interact, trade, exchange, kind of within the own Uniswap ecosystem. And that seems all well and good, provided that people can get to UniChain and get off it quickly and easily.
Yeah.
So Across is deeply integrated with these types of L2s like UniChain, which is launching next year, early next year. And so we offer this like, again, very quick 2-second user experience to get to UniChain and get back off it. Again, we've worked very closely with Uniswap. Uniswap has integrated Across directly into their application today. So this is pre-UniChain. Uniswap has integrated Across to be able to bridge between different Ethereum networks. If your users or your audience goes to Uniswap right now, you'll see like a swap ETH between chains that's powered by Across and that has our quick, you know, 3-second median fill time experience. And once UniChain comes online, it's going to be front and center to that too, where you're going to have, hey, here's UniChain, let's go there. There's going to be lots of cheap trading and deep markets. Go there quickly, do what you want to do, come back off whenever you want, make this thing feel like one experience, one unified network.
Yeah, and it makes me think that it might obviate the need or get rid of the need for other swap facilities. Not to like bring anybody down across the space, but there's like a million other sort of swaps. You know, Uniswap was the first, and then there's XSwap, YSwap, ZSwap, or whatever. Do you think that, you know, what you guys are doing with UniChain will make it so that all the liquidity then kind of comes back from all those other swap facilities and kind of just comes and lives on UniChain, all the EVM-based ones?
Maybe. Like, I'm a big fan of the Uniswap team. I've known them a long time. I like what they do. We work closely with them. I think they are building great products. I think that it's still unclear to me where the layer of abstraction exists, even for swapping. We have aggregators, DEX aggregators right now, and we have Binance. Like, you still have too many sources of where you trade things.
Yeah.
I think the end game should be just like, there's just a place I go where I get the best price and I get the best execution. And Uniswap's also doing that with something called Uniswap X too, which is intent-based swapping. It's actually very similar to Across in some ways, it's similar to like a trading experience where Across is bridging. But I think that there's still lots of room for innovation about how we make it easy for users to go to one spot and trade A for B and know they're getting the best execution and also know that it's a really seamless and easy experience. So I think we're going to keep evolving there. And it's ultimately great for the end user.
Yeah. And to kind of just piggyback off that, are like when you talk about the solvers as well, with people who are kind of almost like the market makers for this, like who are they? Are they like actually like just big funds? Are there like individuals that are able to kind of provide liquidity for these intents? How does that work?
Yeah, this is the part that's so cool about crypto, right? Like, okay, so let's go back to TradFi. In TradFi, if you want to be a market maker, like you got to have $100 million and spend, $5 million on lawyers to get your like licenses and all set up and da 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 da. Right? It's just a mess.
And have all this fancy software to run it and
totally right.
Yeah.
Whereas what crypto can do is they can say, hey, here's a blockchain. Here are the rules of the game. They're encoded in a smart contract. Anyone can go play. Like, just go at it, right? And so that's what Across has done with our solver network that provides this like fast interop, this fast bridging experience between chains. And it's very cool because the Across solver network, most of these people are not like big funds. They're most of our solvers are individuals in their basement. We don't really know who they are. We know them by like Discord handles. And there are a few larger players that are beginning to get involved. But like Across does, we did $80 million of volume yesterday. Wow. It keeps going up. But that's being processed by individual actors mainly, which I think is like super cool. Mm.
That is wild. And so the incentive for somebody, you know, at home who maybe has tokens to get involved, is there a fee that people earn in order to do this? Do they get ACX tokens for doing this? How does it all kind of back out?
Yeah, it's purely paid by the fee the user is paying to move value between blockchains. Mm-hmm. So there's no inorganic incentivization. We're not like paying them Across tokens to do this. It's purely, the economics of it are actually pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, if the audience is listening to this, like, it does take some work. You got to know how to set up some infrastructure to be a solver in Across, but it's tractable for reasonably technical people. And they go and do this because they make money. It's as simple as that. And the money they make, it's very small. Like, you go and you use Across, and the fees are average fee on all transactions sub $10,000 is 4 cents. It's very cheap. But when you earn 4 cents on a lot of volume, it adds up. And so it's a pretty cool example of reducing the bloat and the costs of financial services and products. It's like, Bryce, what you were talking about earlier, the Franklin Templeton, 50,000 mm-hmm. transactions, like do 50,000 transactions for pennies, but then do 500,000 or 5 million transactions and it adds up to real money. And the cost of being a solver is pretty low and the fee is non-zero. And so Across can charge low fees that are still economical for our solver network to go and fill.
Yeah, I love it. And yeah, like you said, that's one of those things that is so cool with crypto, is that you could just make your money work hard for you even while you're sleeping and, like, you know, in a sense earning interest or whatever, but you don't need the huge, huge upfront sort of lump sums basically in order to participate that, or the illiquidity from locking up, you know, a CD or some kind of bond that doesn't pay out for a while. So yeah, really, really cool stuff with what you're doing. And you know, before I kind of ask a couple closing questions, I just want to know, is there anything that we didn't touch on with Across that maybe we should have, or even, you know, some exciting things that are coming out within the next, you know, few weeks to months?
Yeah, I think one thing that Across, so going back to Uniswap, we co-authored a standard for, so our architecture, this thing that I described of having these solver networks front funds, we call this intent-based bridging. This intent term, it's a little bit of a nerdy buzzword on crypto Twitter right now, but it is this architecture where the user articulates the intent of what they want to do, and then third-party actors go and fill it. So Across is the leading intent-based bridge. We're frankly the leading bridge right now. And this intent architecture is what enables really fast fills. And we put together a standard with Uniswap. We co-authored it with Uniswap. It has a very difficult to remember name of ERC-7683. So this is an Ethereum improvement proposal. But we co-authored that, and we've gotten really great buy-in from the Ethereum community. At DevCon 2 weeks ago, I had the pleasure of doing a panel with Vitalik and some other heads of the Ethereum ecosystems. But we have all of the major Ethereum L2s, so Arbitrum Optimism, Polygon, ZK Sync, Scroll, Linea, a bunch of others that are all supportive of the standard. And it looks like we're getting real traction around this concept and this idea of becoming a means to unify Ethereum, which we're really proud of. So I wanted to share that.
That'd be huge.
It's cool.
And what happened? Like, how do we know if that's for sure going to happen, or if it, like, what's that process? Is there like some kind of vote, or
it's adoption? So we got their buy-in. Like, all these teams have signaled their support, and so it means that we can, like, move towards saying, hey, this is a reasonably good idea, and this standard defines a mechanism, an interface, a way of doing this that makes it much bigger than Across. It makes it a common standard where it's not about using Across to unify these chains. It's about using this architecture, of which Across will, I hope Across will be the best provider of this service. So I think that's very cool. But I do want to add that it's not like we're Ethereum only. So I'm actually, like, Ethereum's where I started, but I'm pretty bullish on Solana and some other ecosystems too. And Across, we're not quite announcing this yet, but I'll just share, like, a little alpha, but we are actively working on adding other ecosystems like Solana. So I think that's also going to be very cool.
I think that's great. And you know, you get to talk to so many cool names. You mentioned all the L2s, you mentioned Uniswap. You know, what's it like working with all of them? And, you know, I guess, what have you noticed? Because you probably have some of the closest relations to a lot of these projects. You know, what has it been like getting to work with them? And also just, like, what stood out to you? Because we've had this long builders market. Now we're starting to go back into euphoria. Everything's exploding again. Regulations look like they're kind of easing up. And now we're starting to see a lot of projects push down on the gas pedal and accelerate and put out new things. So has there been anything that you've seen, or maybe that you're excited about, that is kind of coming to the market here?
You know, to the first part, Brendan, like, a lot of these teams I have known for a long time. And there's some signal in that. Like, the teams that have been around through multiple cycles, like, they didn't give up, they didn't go away, they kept building. And it's cool to see, like, I know the Uniswap team from when Hayden was the only employee, right? And we know the Optimism team from early on, the Arbitrum team. These teams have been around. These are all 5+ year teams building in the space. And that matters, and it shows. And these are people that actually like crypto. They like what it stands for, and they like their jobs. They like building in the space, even with the, like, cycle of euphoria and dismay, which seems to be part of crypto, right? So I think one thing I'd notice is, like, I think it's cool to look for those people that stick around and aren't in it just for, you know, the hype part of the cycle. They're in it for the long haul. And, you know, like, in terms of all the tech that has come online, yeah, you know, 4 years ago, Ethereum had a major scalability problem, and it has scaled, like, in a big way. It now has an interoperability problem, which is what we're trying to solve, but the scale has been huge. And all of the ZK tech stuff, like, I don't know how much you've gone in with your audience on this stuff, but the ZK stuff is really real, and it's here now today, and it's scaling and growing, and there's all sorts of amazing technologies that people have spent years and years building and are now being turned into actual consumer products that people can use and touch. Even if they're infrastructure that's kind of behind the scenes, we have just this amazing substrate to build crypto and Web3 applications on top of.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, that's a perfect way to kind of close things in summary. I mean, 2025, to me, it just seems like it's going to be not only the year of, you know, we had Matt Hogan on from Bitwise the other day, and he was talking about 2025 going to be bigger inflows into the ETFs than 2024. And so we're like, oh my God, 2024 was historic. He goes, no, like these things take time. So you have that institutional side of capital flowing in and everybody launching their own tokenization projects. But then, like, from your side, like the hardcore developers, like the true builders that are, you know, building the infrastructure, you're like, oh, we're going to have like another sort of Goldilocks period where all this stuff is going to become much more usable and easy. So we're setting up, I mean, not to like throw like the super cycle out there easily or whatever, but like it really is like it seems like so many things are lining up. Plus, you know, it's the year after the Bitcoin halving, and every year after every Bitcoin halving in the past, there's like a really big bubble. So it could be the everything bubble in 2025. We'll see. But we're definitely going to keep tabs on Across and everything that you guys got going on and you guys are building over there.
Thanks, man. Yeah. And I agree.
Big year. Be good. Well, hey, where can people kind of follow along on your journey? You know, are you guys active on Discord, Twitter, Substack?
Yeah. Discord gives me anxiety, but,
do not reach out to him on Discord, everybody. Do not do it.
But I am active, or I try to be a little bit more active recently on Twitter or X. My handle there is Hal2001. And of course, you can follow Across Protocol on Twitter too.
Awesome. And I've always wanted to ask you this because I have seen you on X and so on. Eric, you must be a big fan of 2001 Space Odyssey. Is that right?
It's literally like my computer generated email when I entered college was Hal2001. Wow. Which is, so yeah, for the audience, HAL is the computer in 2001 A Space Odyssey. Bryce, do you know why it's called HAL? Do you know where they got the name from?
I don't actually. Maybe it's an acronym. I don't know.
IBM, take IBM and transcribe it back one digit. It's HAL, right? So that's how it comes from. And my computer science professors in college thought it was amazing that my computer generated email was HAL2001. So
you were quite literally the chosen one. You're the chosen one. And you realize your name is Hart Lambert too. H-A-L.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, yeah. That's why it was automatically generated. Yeah, H-A-L. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'm in the Matrix right now.
It's all a simulation, man. It's all it one is. Simulation.
I love it. Well, hey, look, Hart, Hal, I'll call you Hal from now on. We appreciate you coming on. We really would like to invite you back. Whenever the time's right, whenever you guys got some more updates or some things that are exciting you, please let us know. You always got a homo here over at Crypto 101 Pod.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you for having me.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.